From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Boston and PRI, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. The Keystone XL pipeline has now been in the pipeline for 6 years, and though Democrats in the Senate recently blocked a congressional move to force the hand of President Obama, it may still get the green light. Republicans say they'll try again after they take control of both sides of Congress in January. For the Canadian producers of the highly polluting tar sands oil, speed is essential, as the world price of oil has dropped sharply, squeezing profitability and scaring investors. Keystone XL's fast path to the Gulf Coast refineries would get tar sands oil to market cheaper and make increased production more attractive. For insight, we turn to energy investment strategist Joe Stanislaw. Joe, welcome back to Living on Earth.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Considering the prospects for the price of oil, how crucial is Keystone to making it economically viable to use tar sands oil?
Does it make a difference right now in the short term? Probably not a whole lot at all. But let's be realistic. So far, that oil has not been moving through those pipelines. It's been going east and west through other already existing pipelines. There are other pipelines being built in Canada, one going east, one going west, to the tune of about 2 million barrels a day of oil equivalent flow. So that oil is going to be produced. It's going to be moved. That's a fact. When it actually is produced and moved is an issue of pricing and timing, but it's going to happen over the next 5 or 10 years. If it's delayed 20 years, if there are enough objections to it on the environmental front, they may pull back on that. But with current situation and potential alternative routes for exporting over the next 5 or 10 years, it'll happen.
Now, Joe, I know you're familiar with the argument that's put forth by some that to protect the climate, 2/3 at least of present oil and carbon-based fuel reserves need to stay in the ground. How do you reconcile additional infrastructure like Keystone against those kind of concerns?
In the short term, we're not going to get off the stuff, as they say, and oil will move, but there will be that transition period taking place, and it will begin to accelerate in the mid-20s, probably. But equally, I think more and more people will recognize that, you know, there used to be the fear of peak oil supply. That's now certainly been discredited. The real issue is people are going to find new ways not to use this stuff. People will be using it much more efficiently. Alternative sources will be found. Peak oil demand is really should be the factor people's looking at.
Joe Stanislaw, you're saying that really, only in another decade or so are we going to be looking for more and more oil. How much sense does it make to install large infrastructure like a Keystone XL pipeline if it's really only going to be around for, say, a decade or so?
There will still be a lot of oil being used after a decade from now. You know, the pipelines will last a lot longer, without question. But if you can make a good return in 10 years, you're feeling pretty comfortable.
To what extent do you see Keystone XL as, frankly, more of a political lightning rod than something that the oil industry absolutely has to have to operate effectively?
I would say it is a very political issue. And to use some words that you used before, it's almost a lightning rod. It captures all of those features from an environmental point of view that, you know, ignites everyone's passions, concerns. It's oils moving across national boundaries. It's oils that have a potentially higher environmental footprint and CO2 footprint than other oils. And it also focuses attention on something that, you know, does have a very large long-term potential because it is the largest oil resource base in the world. And that maybe now is the time to try and stop it in its tracks, if one can, to stop it from realizing that long-term potential. So that focuses attention.
Well, and of course, this expansion, you talk about economic costs eventually coming down, but the environmental costs for these sources seem to be going up, that you go to sensitive areas like tar sands, you go into deep in the Gulf of Mexico, and we saw what happened there, the risks in the Arctic people are very concerned about, and there's a lot of head-scratching about what would happen in Brazil if that deep drilling ever took place.
I think you raised the right point, Steve, of one of the key costs in production is the environmental cost. I will say, though, Steve, it's fairly interesting. If you look at the environmental cost that, you know, people identify and say, you must meet these. Now, CO2 is a challenge that has not been met yet, but on most others, The costs are high, but over time, even those environmental costs come down. With the learning curve, the improvement in technology, how it invigorates new research and development to create the technologies at lower cost that can meet those environmental costs.
How long can the oil industry afford to wait on moving forward with Keystone XL? It's been, 6 years? In other words, how hard are they going to push for action when the new Republican-dominated Congress arrives in January to force President Obama's hands to approve this thing?
The longer it takes to realize an investment that you start, the less likely you're going to have any reasonable return on that investment. And, you know, each additional month at this point is, and every 6 months, you know, you're impacting the economic potential of this project. So I've been asking myself for a few years. It's been going on a long, long time. When does the company give up? I just don't know the answer to that.
Joe Stanislaw is an expert on energy and technology investment strategy and the founder of the J.A. Stanislaw Group. Joe, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Steve, it's been a pleasure, and thank you very much for the challenge.